Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sport 360 Talking Cricket Podcast. This week, I'm your host once again, Barney Reed, and I'm joined by Ajit Vijayakumar from Sport 360. Hello, Ajit.
Hello, how are you?
I'm brilliant, thanks, mate. All very good. And India cricket correspondent Chetan Narula. Hello, Chetan.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Chetan. You're joining us from the phone. Whereabouts are you at the moment?
Well, at the moment, I'm just resting at home in Delhi, but scheduled to take my flight out to Mumbai tomorrow. It should be a cracking for this match.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. How's Delhi at the moment?
Oh, it must be bad.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of pollution there.
It's starting to get a bit nippy at the moment. We're already in December. It should have got a lot more, a lot colder. But this year, it's supposed to be an abnormal winter, so still a bit hot during the day, but gets very nippy in the evening.
Yeah, at the moment we've just got fog. The morning fog's covering the massive skyscrapers in Dubai.
I've got an evening flight tomorrow, so just keeping fog in mind.
Yeah, we're obviously gearing up for this this next test in India-England, starting Thursday in Mumbai at the Wankhede. Chetan, your first thoughts, going into this game, a lot of changes, especially from both teams.
Well, yeah, I think England's changes will be more under the scanner for this particular test match. They've had quite a few injuries. They've had a long tour, not just for India. They've also been touring Bangladesh. So quite a few changes. They have two new names coming in who do not, fancifully do not bring a lot of experience I wouldn't want to say struggling, but yes.
You can say struggling.
Sorry?
You can say struggling, it's fine.
Well, yeah, they are struggling.
We're our number two to one.
So yeah, Jennings and Liam Dawson coming in. Jennings in the mold of an opener who can bowl a bit medium pace. Liam Dawson out and out left arm spinner. So not too much experience there, but more of fallback options for England. I'm not sure either of them will play. England so far have been following the script that India have written. They're playing three spinners. I guess the composition of their side allows them that, with Ben Stokes bowling medium pace. So it allows them to play three spinners, but it's not really helped them. So they might, with Stuart Broad getting fit, if he gets fit, they might just play the extra pace this time around and see what happens, really. India, meanwhile, yes, they're struggling with the fitness issues of KL Rahul and Parker Patel. I'm hearing that Vridhiman Saha might not be fit, so Patel might just get to play another test.
Yeah, well, Ajit, looking at that, and as Cheating says there, England obviously have decisions to make. Cheating says there about Keaton Jennings as one. He's out here against the UAE, scoring 100 in that first game of the series the other day. And speaking to the ECB today, they were quite certain he might well be getting a job. He's much fancied by them.
Yeah, and he scored heavily for Durham, if I'm not wrong.
In the county season, I don't have in front of
me
how many.
I think
there's
some
lot
more than 1,500 runs that he scored. And looking at the team, I believe they have a bit a problem when it comes to bowling. The batting, they don't have that many options, if you may say. But the combination, when it comes to bowling, they'll have a headache of how many spinners do you have, how many fast bowlers you have, should you have. Now, Mohali, as it turned out, they should have, they could have had probably an extra seamer given the condition. Now, Mumbai as well. It will give them. It will be pretty enticing for England to go with a pace attack, because if we look at their record in Mumbai, it is excellent. They have absolutely thrashed India there on previous occasions. Now, but considering the confidence that or the lack of confidence in the team this time, I don't know whether they are in a position to really. Take advantage of history which is on their side at the venue. Having said that, if you look at the first test, it was not all that bad up until when India were 200 for 6 and the game was still in the balance. I would say that partnership between Ashwin and Jadeja, which took India's score to 400, then accentuated all the problems that we are talking about, team combination and all, because let's admit, India also had similar problems. They didn't have an opener, wicket keeper, and at 200 for 6, if India had been 230 all out, and then we would have talked about the other things, other issues like form of Rahane. What about Umesh Yadav? He's not picking that many wickets. So, despite India definitely playing better cricket and England falling 2-0 behind, I would still wait to see how teams go on the first day, because once the toss falls in your favour, probably a session or two go in your favour, then things start to unravel in a way which which has basically been the scene this test series. Teams bat well, then suddenly lose the way right at the end of the session. Something clicks or something doesn't click. But there's no doubt England have a lot more headaches than India. As far as the Indian team is concerned, they would be just looking at the fitness of the players and who can they rely, not only this series but in the future as well, because if we, let's say, talk about Parthiv Patel, yes, he scored well, but I still have my doubts about his wicket.
You're not a fan of his glove work, are you?
it's just terrible. It was shocking for me. I don't know if this is like even the second or third best wicket keeper that India has can produce, and that too after 10 years on the domestic circuit. It doesn't say a lot about the wicket-keeping skills in India. Yes, the wicket-keeper batsmen are excellent. You look at the players who are on the list, and they're like some very good batsmen, wicket-keepers. But even now, you have to say MS Dhoni is by far and away the best wicket-keeper batsman in the country, which, looking at the overall scenario, would be a bit of a concern for the Indian management, not for this test, but just looking ahead.
In the long term. Cheating, is that something that is felt quite commonly in India when it comes to the wicket-keeping?
I'm not sure, really, because, Vidhwan Saha had dropped a few catches in the series. He dropped a couple in Rajkot. He dropped one, I think, in Vishakhapatnam. It's a stumping chance, if I'm not sure. Parthiv Patel, yes, he missed a catch, a stumping. I think three chances he missed in Mohali. So, these things happen, as an Indian bowler would say, and they have said that in the press conference time and again, that, you miss catches, you miss stumping, this happens. But I think the basic point here to be understood is that the Indian team management is looking for somebody who has experience behind the stumps, because it's not easy keeping to, Ravichandran Ashwin, Ravindra Jadeja, Jayant Yadav, quite a few spinners. They have top-class spinners, so it's not easy keeping it to them. So in that sense, they are right to go in with tried and tested hands. Saha, obviously, he's the number one choice. They're looking at number two. Naman Ocha kept wickets last year. He was injured. They didn't want to rush him. He just played the one Ranji game. Dinesh Karthik's not been keeping wickets for a long time now. He's keeping in some games. In some games, he's not keeping for Tamil Nadu. So that was the reason given by Anil Kumble in the pre-match press conference. So they are going for experience. Obviously, it's a big stage for Parthiv Patel coming back in the side after 8 years. I'm not going to be judging him based just on the Mohali outing. If he gets another test match and if he drops or misses stumping, then you can start thinking, okay, is this the best India can produce? But just on the basis of one test match, he's not kept to Ravichandran Ashwin for a long, long time. So he's not kept to the top spinners. He's not kept at the top level, with so much scrutiny on him. Overall package, yes, he did very, very well. But in terms of comparison, I think in terms of drops or in terms of his batting, he matched Vidhwan Saha on his comeback. So not too keen to judge him on just the basis of the one test match.
That's very fair of you, Cheetham. I like it. And from an English perspective, I know a lot of people have been impressed by Bairstow. I mean, going over to India and keeping on those wickets, as you say, it's not the easiest thing to do, especially for someone that coming from England. So it's something that there's added importance, isn't there, where as soon as you go to the subcontinent, yeah, and you see it against these spinners and you're standing up and the ball starts shooting low and it starts spitting out of the rough, it's not the easiest place in the world to keep.
And we must also remember now there's a Buttle in the side as well, so he'll have to raise his game. There will be some pressure on him. Bairstow, I would say he, because since he's been seen, he's being seen as a long-term prospect. He's building his way towards being the number one wicketkeeper in England. And I would say still some work remains, because he too has dropped a few catches, but his batting is so good. He looks solid on the ground, and he looks a part. He looks like he's here to stay, and he just provides a lot more stability to the team, and with his demeanor and the confidence that he plays. So in that sense, yes, England would be fairly happy. But and the thing is, with Josh Buttle also there, it would keep him honest on his toes. And
I can tell you, both of them will relish that. They're both the kind of characters that will really enjoy that and enjoy stepping their games up. And Cheetan, you'll have to help us out here with this. Ajit, I'll let you explain. The rumor mill, the thing that you've been hearing.
So instructions apparently Chetan have been sent out to Mumbai groundsmen about what sort of the wickets the Indian team wants for this test. And we are like hearing stories about groundsmen being preparing certain kinds of wicket for the Indian team.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, if you want my take on it, I wouldn't be too sure about it, because the only thing that I've heard about the pitches this series was that the team, Indian team management, was not happy with the grass on the Rajkot pitch.
Yeah.
Apart from, I mean, and to be very honest, there was a bit too much grass there, and the pitch just didn't deteriorate at all in five days. I mean, I was just riding a piece, and it was just like a highway track outside the stadium. So that was not the best pitch. Apart from that, we haven't really seen pitches that have been turning square. They've been variable bounds in Vishakhapatnam, variable bounds in Mohali. None of them turned really square. Mumbai, again, I wouldn't expect it to turn square, but I'm ready to be surprised.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much I would want to trust the rumor mill that they have instructed them to especially make turning wickets. Probably they've asked them not to keep grass on it. I think that's and I think that's a fair request. You know, you come to India, you shouldn't be expecting grass on the wickets.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You can expect normal wear and tear for 5 days, to be honest. I think we've had excellent pitches this home season. All the three pitches in the New Zealand series were excellent test pitches, especially the one in Kolkata, which was helping the Pacers. So, in that particular sense, I think the pitches have been very impressive. And India are playing well. They don't really need to send out any special instructions, except saying that, okay, we don't want too much grass on it.
I think, as you say there, Cheetan, I mean, one thing that should be acknowledged in this from this series, and as you say, New Zealand as well, the pitches have been brilliant. I mean,
exactly.
And it's not been unfair. Of course, you prepare a pitch that's in your home conditions. Everyone's entitled to do that, but it's not been unfair. I think it's been balanced. I think they've provided good cricketing test wickets, and I think the BCCI's groundsmen should be applauded for this. Personally, I think they've done a sterling job so far.
Yeah, probably.
Absolutely. Yeah, and also just a word from there. I mean, last year we had so much talk about the pitches in the South Africa series, so it's a welcome change, you know, even from a viewing point of view, not just the covering media, but also, you know, people who are coming in to watch matches. You know that it's not going to end in 3 days or 4 days. Yeah. There was a lot of talk about the Mohali pitch, how dry it was, how many cracks it was. In the end, there was just some dust flying off it, and, you know, some invariable bounce. So, yeah, in that sense, yes, I fully agree with you. I mean, the pitch curators and Indian team management also needs to be applauded for not sending out messages that we want rank turners. You know, this bunch of players, they really want to compete. You know, they want to play on any surface that's given to them, and I think that's fair play to them.
Definitely, and I don't think that's that team as well. What it seems like, that Indian team wouldn't want people to say, oh, you've only won because the pitches are in your favour. They'd want to be the better team, and they have been so far, and I think you have to hold your hands up and say so.
And especially now that they have fast bowlers who can make use of the conditions, the new ball and the old ball.
Yeah.
And they have a captain who believes that even if it's a dust bowl, all five bowlers have to be given an equal number of overs. You look at throughout the series, Shami, Yadav, they have been given overs. If the captain, since there can be a change of pace, there can be change of strategy. It doesn't matter. Ashwin is on 3 wickets or 6 wickets. If he feels that the batsmen are getting used to it, he just changes the bowling, and he has the options. And even the bench strength is pretty good when it comes to this current team. So
yeah.
A, you have the bench strength, and B, you have a captain who has confidence in the strategy. If you have 4 or 5 bowlers, all of them should be utilized if they are capable, and he's giving them the confidence. And in that case, you really don't need dust bowls. Yes, they have 3 spinners who are providing great support, but fast bowlers as well, they are running in very hard. I'm thoroughly impressed by Mohammad Shami, despite the serious injuries that he has had. And there have been many other Indian fast bowlers who have cut down on their workload, fearing more injuries, and they have eased themselves out of test cricket. But here's one guy who's just running in hard, and despite being in danger of sustaining another serious blow, he's performing for his team, and he's just running in on some pretty low and slow wickets.
Mm.
So yes, that's a great sign for the Indian team. I would just hope if the other fast bowlers are also tested and seen how good they are for the future, because whatever pool we have at the moment, you just cannot rely on two fast bowlers. You need a couple more, and you need to test them against top teams and see how good or bad they are. But given the form the current paces have shown, I don't think so you can really tinker with the combination too much. But if it does come to that situation, I would be very happy just to see what the other bowlers have been up to.
Yeah, and I mean, they might even be able to get to try something different in the final test. They might
yes,
be coasting by then.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing, when you were on last time, Cheetan, we were talking then, I mean, how great Haseeb Hameed had been in that first test that he had played in. And that's been a big discovery for England during this series, and they'll be hoping that someone like Kean Jennings, if he comes in, will be the next discovery they make. And hopefully, you know, it's a team in transition, and they will be learning from an Indian perspective. Just how good has it been to see Jayant Yadav's performances?
Oh, he's been fantastic. I mean, he just played 2 test matches, but has at any moment has he looked like he's played only 2 test matches? No. He looks like someone who has so much experience behind him. He just, you know, for me, the standout point was that in Mohali, the first hour of play had gone, and, you know, India was a bit slacking in the field, dropping catches here and there. And the first spinner that he introduced was not Ashwin. He introduced Jayant Yadav. Ashwin had just dropped a catch, he had misfielded. And perhaps he was, you know, expecting that maybe he was low on confidence. And Kohli just throws the ball to Jayant Yadav, and he comes in and he delivers, he gets a wicket, opens the floodgates, and, you know, suddenly India are barging in, Ashwin is bowling at the other end, and it becomes really tough. So, you know, mighty, mighty impressive, mighty, mighty fine for India from this series, Jayant Yadav. The big thing here is that, you know, Kohli has shown that he wants the fifth bowler in his playing 11. Now, when you play a leg spinner, you know, unless a leg spinner is playing in a, you know, primary role of, say, a first spinner or a second spinner. We saw last year in Sri Lanka, Amit Mishra was playing as a second spinner with Ashwin, and he bowled beautifully, absolutely beautifully. But in conditions where, you know, he's the third spinner, he's the backup spinner behind Ashwin and Jadeja, he wouldn't get that confidence, and we saw that in Rajkot. It was not a helpful pitch. Despite being a leg spinner and despite Aazim Rashid getting help, he was not able to impress. So you want somebody to just come in and not, you know, not feel that pressure, not be affected if he doesn't have that confidence from the captain. So Jayant Yadav know that he's, you know, he's not the primary bowler, he's not the primary off spinner. That is Ashwin. That is Ashwin's role. So he comes in and he bowls his few overs, and he doesn't bowl them under any pressure. He knows his job. He comes in, he bowls, he gets those wickets. And again, he's contributed with the bat. He's contributed in the field. He got his maiden 15 in Mohali. He's been very impressive, very mature, and, you know, again, really great find. And the biggest point for me is that he'd also keep Ashwin thinking, you know, because two off spinners sharing their trade secrets, working together, working out the batsmen, you know, bowling. They were bowling in tandem at different points. So, you know, it really augurs well. And as Ajit was saying, you know, at the moment, India's bowling attack looks really, really balanced. They are a top side at the moment, and it's thanks to that bowling attack, you know, good pace attack, good spin attack, and they've found a new off spinner to support them. So the five ball theory is not going away anytime, and that should be worrying, not just for England in the next two matches, but also Australia coming in next year.
Yeah, would you agree with that, Ajit? I mean,
yes, and the biggest positive is he takes, Jayant Yadav takes a lot of load off Ashwin.
Mm.
Now, at the start of the series, I believe the entire Indian strategy revolved around Ashwin because he bats at that crucial position. He's become one of the most important batsmen in the Indian team. He has bailed them out so many times, and with his bowling as well, he's the main bowler. So there was way too much pressure on Ashwin. If he has two bat sessions, it was like basically India had a bat session. But with Jayant Yadav, there's like his workload has reduced considerably, and he looks pretty calm out there. He knows what he is doing now. The teams, like, you look at Haseeb Ameer, you look at Jayant Yadav, you see them on the field, and they are not being rushed into anything. They know what they're doing, and whatever the talent, whatever they have, they know their levels pretty well, and they are performing accordingly. Now, what that does is everyone else they get that much freedom to push themselves, because they know there's this player who will take soak up the pressure and just do his bit, because everyone cannot be adventurous in a test team. So Jayant Yadav, he just I would say he calms everyone around with his reliable batting and bowling. So everyone else in the team, in the batting department or the bowling department, they can breathe a little bit easier, because to come in immediately and make such an impact, it's quite incredible. Just like Haseeb Ameer has done. I still cannot believe how well he batted despite being just a teenager and having spent just one season in the domestic circuit, and it's amazing.
Even with a broken hand, he can do anything.
The most incredible bit I
heard. He'll start bowling soon.
The most incredible bit I heard after he broke his finger, he apparently changed his grip.
Mm.
He changed his grip, went to the nets, tried on his new grip with his little finger poking out. He batted with that, and then he used that grip to score a 50. Now, that's the most incredible thing I have heard. And then to score a 50 in a test match is just outstanding. And I was no wonder Trevor Bailey said, like, some of the players in the team, they were just in awe of this teenager has done. And he said, I can recall many names who would make a big song and dance about some tweak here and there. And here is a player who's broken his finger and changed his grip and then scored 50. It's just superb. It's absolutely superb.
I think it's shaped up as a great series, hasn't it? This Cheetham, would you agree with that? It's been a cracking series so far.
Absolutely. I mean, England have never looked that they are not in it. They are a strong side, probably the strongest side India will face in this home season. I mean, I'm happy to be wrong. Australia are very, very welcome to prove me wrong, but on the current evidence, it doesn't look like it. England have been very, very strong, and at no point have India looked relaxed. Against New Zealand also, India were not looking relaxed. But compared to the New Zealand series, I think India have taken up their game a couple of years up, and they know that, you know, in any moment that they are caught napping, England will bounce on them. They have adapted in that sense. They have played tactics accordingly. So it's been a cracking series, no doubt. And I expect that this small gap that England have got between third and the fourth test, where they just refresh themselves, I think that might just help them. What might also help them is winning the toss in Mumbai, because they know they have committed errors in the previous matches despite winning the toss, and maybe this time around they might want to enforce themselves on the... I fully expect England to bring in a lot of changes to start playing cricket according to according to their principles rather than, you know, playing it according to what India are doing, especially in this four test match. Otherwise, the series will be gone.
Yeah, well, they'll be hoping that the Dubai Suns helped them out, because half the squad's here at the moment sunning themselves.
Did you do anything to cheer them up? Did you go to find where they're putting up?
They'll be hoping so. But Cheetan, I mean, just to finish, your thoughts on this fourth test. I mean, how do you see it panning out? How do you see it going? What's your gut saying?
Well, like I said, first of all, I expect England to ring in the changes. It's too broad a fit. I expect a three-man pace attack, probably just the two spinners with Ben Stokes in there as well. I'm not sure about what their batting combination might look like, because Ben Duckett can open the innings well. They might go in for his experience, although it's not much to say about in these conditions. But yeah, I expect a lot of changes from England to play cricket according to what they know. The pitch, not expecting too much grass, but not expecting a round turner either. Could be wrong again. I haven't seen the pitch yet. India, well, Virat Kohli doesn't really play the same side, beg your pardon. He likes to change things around. If KL Rahul is fit, it might get interesting whether Karun Nair will play another match or not. So there might be a couple of changes for India as well. But apart from that, the match, you know, for me, again, I don't believe that toss holds so much importance. It's how you play, and you've seen through the series, England won the toss in Rajkot. They got a big score. Could have gone wrong. They had three or four catches put down, so could have gone really wrong for them. And it happened in Mohali when they won the toss and were bowled out cheaply. So I'm somebody who doesn't, you know, hype up the toss too much. But having said that, if England lose the toss in this fourth test match, they might just lose the battle a bit mentally. I think for them, it's very, very important to win the toss again in Mumbai. So, yeah, let's see how it pans out.
Yeah, you're heading out there tomorrow, did you say?
Tomorrow evening, yes.
Yeah, well thanks for joining us, Cheetan, and I hope you have a safe flight, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you soon.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, mate.
Thanks.
That was Indian cricket journalist Cheetan Narula. Now we're joined by Pakistani cricket journalist Hasan Cheema. Hasan, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Now, Hasan, we'll get stuck into it with a bit of Pakistan, New Zealand. I mean, first of all, the big question, is this the end?
yeah, that's the question that's been raised over and over again. But I think considering what they did in England earlier this year, I don't think there should be that much doubts over their quality. The thing in this case was they were just underprepared. I mean, first the West Indies series didn't exactly go to plan for them. Then their only warm-up game was rained out. So but their first bat in alien conditions in like 3-4 months was in that first test batting first. So, and they really never recovered from that.
It does seem like a lot of people have been saying that, just that though. It seems like they've forgotten all of a sudden what has happened over the last few years. Has that been the feeling that you've seen? It's been madness. Just, you know, two tests lost, as you said, underprepared, and people absent. It's a bit mad, isn't it? Is this massive overreaction?
It's sort of an overreaction, but it's been coming because a lot of people here, a lot of ex-cricketers here tend to disagree with this team and what they've done over the past 6 years, almost on an ideological level. So with that in mind, anytime they were going to falter, they were going to be question marks around them. And especially considering that they reached the number one ranking, which suddenly made those ex-cricketers, it brought a comparison between what they did and what these guys are doing. And considering all the preaching that they do, the fact that they've never been to the number one ranking when these guys were there, sort of hit them a little hard. So the reaction right now is, you could say this is Pakistan's first serious loss in 2.5 years. So it's been building up to this until now.
Gee, that's tickle, Gee.
That's just grim. So Hasan, I just wanted to ask, are we getting a glimpse of life after Yunus and Misbah?
Yeah, that is actually the worrying thing, because especially with the second test, without Misbah there, the question suddenly was whether you bring in Shajil, who's never played a test match, or Rizwan, who's never played a test match as well. So, and with Hafiz gone, others had to open, which has brought Babar into the team, and he's been exceptional, but it isn't exactly a foolproof plan to have someone who's had one away tour being your number three in all three formats immediately.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, because you could say over the past 6 years, Pakistan has been a little, it's almost been like they've been in stasis. They've looked at each series on its own. Like, there has never been long-term planning, you could say, on that regard. And that's why they struggled without Syed Ajmal for a little bit as well.
Mm.
Once the Rehman-Ajmal combo was broken, they weren't really that successful in tests immediately after that. So it's always been, they've always looked at series by series. The Pakistan West Indies series was perhaps the first time that I actually looked further forward. They brought in Babar, they brought in Nawaz, but it was also because that was the first time you could say that Pakistan had gone into a series almost for once being favoured, because even in the past when Australia and England and New Zealand have come to play in the UAE, on paper you could nearly always argue that Pakistan were the lesser team, and they've always had to march above their weight, so they haven't really had the time for long-term planning as such. And going series by series by series, they've eked out 6 years from Yunus and Misbah, who's six and a half now, which is far more than they would have expected the first time they played in South Africa. So as far as this being a window into the future, I think so, considering that the depth really isn't that much there.
It's always been the riddle, though, hasn't it, over the last, well, as you say, like 6 years. I mean, the riddle of solving who's going to replace Misbah and Yunus Khan. I mean, do you think they're any closer to finding that out, Hassan?
I think the original plan had been that Azhar and Asad would be the immediate replacement, and you would bring in whatever the equivalents of Azhar and Asad were, the replacement that they had. And Asad has, we saw Asad perform really well in England, especially towards the end of the series.
Yeah.
He hasn't had a great New Zealand tour, but he's, you could almost say, the proven quality. Similarly, Azhar, for all his detractors, has been Pakistan's outstanding batsman over the past couple of years. So them two have sort of solidified that role. And with Babar coming in, at least as one of the guys, the proto-Asad is there, the proto-Azhar perhaps isn't there. But the bigger problem is that if Azhar is going to open rather than bat three, then that sort of dismantles the way Pakistan play. Because one of the things that they always had was they would have a field at the top of the order who batted in a gear different to the rest of the top five, and then you would have Asad and Sarfraz batting in a higher gear as well. But if Sami and Azhar are going to play as they do at the top, then Pakistan's middle order might have to rethink how they play.
One more thing I would like to ask you about is Mohammad Aamir. Now, he's played, what, non-stop, I guess, the entire year, and is probably, he must be pretty knackered by this time.
yeah, they rested him for the second test in the West Indies series, for that exact reason. That it's not just that he's been playing consistently since the Asia Cup, it's that he pretty much plays every single match of every single format, because Pakistan, the performances of Pakistan in coloured clothing haven't been exactly ideal, so they tend to go into each match as if this is the one that it's a must win. So they rarely rotate. It's always the best players always have to play. So they rested Aamir for the second test against the West Indies, but even with that, it's not as if Aamir, perhaps it has to do with the feeling that he's had to deal with, but he still hasn't hit the heights that he did in 2010, for instance.
Ajit, you've been very critical of Australia recently. I mean, that's the next step in line for Pakistan. I mean, what are your thoughts on that series now? I mean, before the New Zealand series here, I think you probably would have looked at it maybe a little bit differently. I mean, how are you looking at it now?
You're talking about Okay, Hasan, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I thought it was for me.
No, you go ahead.
For me, it's a bit like museums might have broken their stride, but they still tend to have the way Pakistan will play is the way Pakistan will play. And the way Pakistan play is something that New Zealand can counter a lot better than I think Australia can, even in their own conditions.
When it comes to this Australian team, I would still say they are heavily dependent on two names. You take one Mitchell Starc out, or you take one of either Warner and Stephen Smith out, and this entire team falls apart in any format you look at it. So New Zealand as a whole, they are a well-rounded side. They have a lot of solid players at various positions. You cannot say that about Australia by any stretch of the imagination. They have made wholesale changes to the team. And they will have some serious selection issues, not only this month, they'll have it next year as well, and they will have to field two completely separate teams, a separate T20 team and a separate test team. So Australia, no matter what the results are shown, there is a lot of instability going forward. But as far as Pakistan is concerned, yes, if it's not like there will be two. They will be fairly equal in the sense that they have their certain set of issues which might cancel each other out. And we'll see how that pans out. But obviously, the conditions will be a major factor. But for once, the fast bowling will be at par, so that will be great to watch.
Yeah, it should be. I think the battle between the quick should be a fascinating watch. Exactly. And Hasan, I mean, as you mentioned earlier on, I mean, Pakistan's preparations were thrown out of kilter, really, in New Zealand. How are they preparing for this? Because there's been quite a long break now, actually, between the New Zealand series and what's going to be the Australia series. How are they preparing for it?
I think they've got one or two side matches right before the first test, which is bound to help them adjust to the Australian conditions, you could argue. But the fact that the first test in particular is, again, a day-night affair tends to skew whatever parameters you might otherwise have. And Pakistan, for that, Pakistan has tried to have every domestic team has had one day-night pinball match in the domestic season. You also got the match against the West Indies. And the major reason why that was played was almost as a preparation for the GABA test, the first test that Pakistan is going to have. So perhaps they're better prepared for that than they were for the New Zealand series. But even in that case, playing the pinball at the GABA is going to be a completely different scenario to what they had in the domestic game, or especially what they had in the Dubai test.
And you mentioned about the makeup of the Pakistan side. I mean, how do you expect them to take to the field when it is for that GABA test? I mean, are you expecting it to be a more settled 11 by then?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the big question is going to be now they've sort of agreed upon Babar as the number three, which would mean Asad goes back to six, which, of course, you have the two old men at four and five, and other is one of the opener, other and Sami. So that's pretty much the top seven selected itself. Although I still disagree with the order in which they're in, but that is your top seven. The big question mark is going to be the four bowling places. Pakistan, one of the reasons Pakistan struggled in New Zealand more than their batting, I mean, man for man, they probably had a better batting than New Zealand, but they didn't bowl as well as New Zealand, which even with four pacers in the second test. So the question is going to be whether Yasir comes back and how much of an influence does Yasir have in this series, and which three pacers does he go with. He'll go with Ahmed, that's for sure, but the other two, it's up for debate because no one's really staked the claim as such.
We'll get on to the seamers in a minute. I know Ajit feels strongly about that New Zealand attack. But putting your selectors cap on, you mentioned there about the batting order. How would you line them up then?
I have Babar batting at six.
Yep.
And Asif at three.
Yeah, fair enough. There's that one done. Ajit, we said about this before. I mean, the New Zealand attack that Pakistan faced at that point in time wasn't the greatest, was it?
Colin de Grandom, he just coming up and picking up sixes. As Hasan said, probably it was all down to just lack of preparation and just being surprised by what was thrown at them. But more than that, I would feel the most startling aspect was the chase. Pakistan chase in the final test. Now that was still an opportunity for them to draw something out of it, even if it had been a stalemate. The way if they had gone, let's say, lost the series 1-0, that would have still, as a spectator, that would have given some hope going forward. But the one thing I still just still can't get my head around is the openers batting for 60 overs and scoring 130, and while trying to enforce them themselves and looking like going after the target, that is something which went nowhere, and probably that's one aspect which still rattles around in my head. Fast bowlers, if you look, fast bowlers did decently. In fact, you look at Sohail Khan, he picked 7 wickets and he also scored some runs. But it was that batting in that second is which could have salvaged something for Pakistan. But it ended up just giving New Zealand bowlers a greater opportunity in that final session. Had they batted perfectly, I don't think so. New Zealand would have that much of a confidence if the run rate was a lot closer. It was run a ball in the final session.
Mm.
If you take it like 150 of 200 balls and it changes, and then fast bowlers, everyone would have might not have been as confident going into that last session.
Hasan, you must hate having to hear this, but it was typical Pakistan, wasn't it?
With this team, the typicality is slightly different in the sense that one thing that surprised me was, as Ajit mentioned, the lack of understanding of the game, and that's been the thing. The reason they've punched above their weight has been their game awareness. And in the first test, Azhar's 31 of 171 was unique, to say the least. And even in the second test, if they wanted to go for a win, they should have gone at a better rate in the first two sessions. And if they were going for a draw, then they should have just kept everything down. It was like there was muddled thinking throughout that tour.
Yeah, it's almost caught in the middle, caught in two minds.
Which you could argue is typical Pakistan. It's been for a couple of decades at least now.
And here I was thinking that had left the game under Misbah Haque, but maybe it's Azhar. blame on Azhar, it's easier that way.
More than 2 years, they hadn't lost a series. So they were doing a lot of things right, but as I said, that session, if they had played out well, it would still salvage a lot of things for Pakistan. You could have easily said the first test was probably down to lack of preparation, and it just happens. Every team loses, it's no big deal. But what really should be not concerned, but it baffles you is what happened in that second innings chase. First, collapse apart. The first session when you bat for 60 overs and openers don't seem to be going anywhere. That unsettles team in ways we cannot understand as viewers, because the dressing room itself, it cannot get the point across. It cannot sense where the game is headed. Are they playing for a draw? We don't know whether they were told to go after the runs and they were unable to. All those things somehow unsettle. And once when Sarfaraz started to bat, he looked very positive, and it was like, yes, everyone is going after the win, and they were looking at runs. Then in that case, what happened in the first 60 overs?
Mm.
They didn't lose the wickets, they didn't score runs. It was like getting stuck, and that undoes a lot of good work which would have otherwise happened. Because this team, you can say, yes, they have won series, they have been the world number one, they are batsmen, bowlers who know, and they've been doing it for years now. It's not like suddenly it has happened. For them to come unstuck in such a way doesn't look good. If you talk about inexperienced team, like in the first few tests, India played against Virat Kohli, they just went after the targets, they didn't care. Yes, that's fine, you can understand. But this is one of the most experienced teams going around in the world. And for them to not to be able to execute that, either plan A or plan B, it is a bit sad to see that such quality and experienced team couldn't get one of those two things right. Either go for the win and just lose by a midwicket. get close and then lose, or just play out for a draw, because that was a bit disheartening for me.
As you can tell, Hassan, this has caused Ajit sleepless nights ever since that final day. Well, Hassan, thanks very much for joining us, mate. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Well, I hope that Mark Lomas has been back in touch with you now. You'll be in Australia, is that right?
Not sure yet.
well, we hope so anyway, hey? Even if not, we'll be looking for a fire, and obviously hopefully Pakistan will be able to turn things around then, and this is just a minor blip. Everyone has a blip. We're all entitled to
it.
Exactly. Well, thanks again, Hassan. Great to speak to you, mate, and take care.
Cheers, mate.
And I also spoke to interim UAE coach Awais Shah earlier on. It was at the end of the UAE losing the three-match series with England Lions 3-0 on a whitewash in Dubai. Awais was quite a frustrated figure after that match. Awais, I mean, first of all, your thoughts on today and how things went?
Frustrating again. We were in a good position. Unfortunately, we gave the advantage away again.
It seems to have been a sort of constant so far during this series that, you know, you guys have put yourselves in good positions and as you said, sort of thrown it away from there. Is this something that is your biggest task with the UAE during your time?
Without a shadow of a doubt. I think, someone, an outsider watching the games, they would have seen a couple of very good bowling teams. Sure, the wickets assisted the bowlers, but a couple of very, very good bowling teams. Unfortunately, the UAE batting unit didn't quite outshine the England A unit, and that's where we lost the games. It's a work in progress. That's the reason I'm here, but it's going to take some time to try to make them understand the value of the wickets and partnerships and stuff like that.
A lot of it is said that, you know, this is a lot of these players play 2020 cricket and, you know, playing 50 overs and even beyond that into sort of first-class cricket and four-day games and stuff, it's the application. Is that something that you've seen so far with these guys? As you know, get to 20, 30-odd and then it sort of collapses a little bit from there.
Well, it doesn't help that there's not many domestic games in the UAE. I mean, where are they doing the learning? Where are the guys who are challenging these guys for their spots? There isn't any. So, you know, that's the frustrating part. You know, we need guys to be challenged constantly for their places so that these guys would have to raise their performances. That's the biggest challenge for us here. If we can get that sorted, I think you will definitely see an improvement in our batting lineup.
And in the batting, a couple of positives. I mean, Roy Mustafa across the three games has got starts. I mean, have you been impressed with him in the way he's gone about it in this game?
Yeah, he's got starts, but I've got no interest in starts. I need match-winning performances. You know, this is not the under-11 cricket where starts are sort of received with a. If somebody gets a start, you say, okay, I'll pat on the back, well done, you got a start. No, this is international cricket, mate. You know, all it be associate is international, and at international level, starts are no good to anyone.
And how do you go about addressing that then? You know, making sure these guys do bat deep and make the most of that.
It's trying to tell them, trying to show them with the video evidence, trying to show them via my own experience. I even got them to talk to the opposition's batting coach and head coach, Andy Flower and Graham Stope, who were very successful cricketers. Like, we've got some of the batters to go and speak to them to how to go about winning, how to put innings together and things like that. So all we can do is obviously try and give them the information, and it's up to them to sort of sift through it all and try and put something into practice so that they could perhaps improve their performances over, say, a 12-month period where we need them to perform and win games for UAE.
And obviously another one today, Adnan Mufti, I mean, coming in for his first UAE game, scoring 69. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about Adnan and how he sort of came into the side, into the setup?
Well, he's sort of trialing with us at the moment. He's by all accounts been a very good player domestically in the past, which is why I got told. So he, you know, he got brought into the squad by the selectors. And yeah, I've been working with him. And a hats off to him. He took his opportunity today when he got given an opportunity to try and keep the team together. And that's the kind of performances we need the top six batters to be doing. I think he batted number seven today.
Yeah.
What he achieved today is how I want all the guys to bat. And it's a shame that it's taking a trialist to show the guys who've got contracts. And I hope that sort of. I sort of rammed home the message to the guys that, you know, it's really not acceptable what they've done in these three games when a guy who's sort of trialing has come along and has shown you how it should be done.
Is that a sort of a kick up the backside a little bit for the rest of the team?
Yeah, damn right. They need a kick up the backside. If we lose 3-0, I'm not going to give them a pat on the back. Mm. That is for sure.
And obviously coming in, it's now, is it two full series, this and Oman, that you've sort of overseen now? I mean, Is there a frustration seeping into things at the moment, the way things have gone so far?
Well, look, I mean, we won the Oman series, which was nice, and unfortunately we lost this series against a very strong England A side. We're just trying to play as much 50-over cricket as we can against strong opposition, which England A was, which will hold us in good stead against some of the associate teams. That's the aim of it. And all I'm want us to do is try and battle with them right to the end. That's all I'm after against someone like an England A team, and even see if we can beat them sometime. That's all I'm after, because if we're neck and neck with England A, there's a very good chance we'll take some very good cricket and associate cricket.
Yes, very true. And I mean, as you said about, you know, England A and England Lions, I mean, you've had experience playing for them in the past. What was it like for you when you were playing in the Lions and the A sides? Was it for you a very acknowledged stepping stone into the main side?
Yeah, why not? I mean, you know, you get an opportunity to play against opposition, and if you put some runs on the board, you're going to get noticed. It was as simple as that. That's how we viewed the UAE, and I'm sure these guys would probably have viewed the UAE in the same way. And how the UAE are probably, that's how the way the UAE viewed them today in the last three games that we've played, is a great opportunity to show our skills against some very good cricketers. And if we can do well against these guys, there's a very good chance, again, like I repeat myself a little bit here, there's a good chance that we'll do well in associate cricket.
Yeah, and of this sort of England Lions side, you've had three looks at them. Is there anyone that's really stood out to you? I mean, obviously, Keaton Jennings called up to the test side, made a big impression in that first game.
Yeah, Keaton's probably the standout batsman between the two innings that I saw, two games that he played, sorry.
Yeah.
He does look a class act. Tom Helm seems a very good bowler. And young Curran, Tom Curran, he looks pretty impressive too. So.
Yeah, and
he got some talent on show there by the England A side.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, if you can compete for them, surely it's good for the future of UAE. I mean, now looking ahead to the next couple of months, I mean, there's obviously not an influx of games coming up, but I mean, how do you guys go from here? What are your preparations now for the end of
2020
winter?
Now all of a sudden, so we've got 2020 competition coming up in January. We've got some 2020 games against Afghanistan, and then we're back into the one day mode. So hopefully we're going to organise some games in maybe Feb, trying to get plenty of practice before some important games against Papua New Guinea in March.
Yeah, and is sights set on that, and in the meantime trying to improve, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks very much for your time, Awais. Thanks for talking to us.
No worries, mate. Cheers.
So, Awais Shah there, as we said in the intro, frustrated man.
I should have been, and he must have been, because first match, talking about the batting needs to improve and they cannot afford to get out for scores like 170 and 115. What do they do in the next match? They get out for 90. And he must be pulling his hair after that match. But yes, in the third match, they got pretty close. Lost just by 16 runs, but let's be realistic. It was a debutant who scored 69. This he definitely is...
A trialist. Speaking to Awais there, guys, playing for Danube, Pakistani native, played first-class cricket in Pakistan, as so many UAE internationals have.
Yeah.
He's trialling with the side. Owais says there, you know, is someone that the board wanted to give a go to. I mean, he said it serves as a kick up the backside for his players. I mean,
yes,
it should, shouldn't it, that this guy comes
yes.
in and he was the only one really, after Rowan Mustafa got out, that gave it a go.
So you look at Rowan Mustafa, he has had high double-digit scores in all three matches, but apart from
30-odd to 40-odd, another 40.
And now you need just three or four players to do that, to compete in what has been a very low-scoring series. You look at probably today's the final match and say, yes, there's some hope. They were able to restrict the Lions to a manageable score, and they got pretty close to it. So if you want to look at it that way, that's fine. It's a team that is building on a professional platform, and it will take some time. I would say the sad reality is if you take Adnan out, who was on his debut, it was another disheartening performance, and it will take probably Ovesha or whoever is in charge in the interim to medium to long term to be a bit more strict. And I don't know whether some harsh words need to be spoken or not, whether they need to be given reality check, just make them a bit more desperate in their cricket. And it's just not good enough to just go through the motions at any level. Forget one run below the international level. At some point, there needs to be some sort of a steel, some anger in the cricket, some passion, which you just cannot play by numbers. Someone comes in, someone bowls, someone scores, and maybe one or two people hope for the best. No, there has to be some answerability. People need to take responsibility now that it's a proper setup in UAE cricket.
Yeah. In all fairness to, especially to Owais, I mean, he says there. Ajit hasn't heard that just yet, just so everyone is aware. But what he says there is, you know, that he is giving these guys that, and you know that starts aren't good enough, and that they have to take responsibility for it. He said about how this week he's gone and taken them over to Andy Flower and got them to speak to him and try and glean things from these sort of people. And another issue that Owais brings up is something that, I mean, you get tired saying it because we've been banging on about it for God knows how long, but When you don't play this much cricket, and if you don't have a domestic structure where people are banging on the door and they want the next call up, they want the next contract, so they see all these UAE players have got it, we want that. If you don't have that in place, these players are relatively coasting. I mean, I know a lot of them, it means a lot to these guys, and I don't want to take anything away from them. And I know that they all want to be playing in a UAE shirt. If there's no pressure on them for their place, I mean,
now, unfortunately, it won't happen anytime soon because it's just started. The system sets, and for it to just percolate through the entire whatever cricketing structure we have, then players to come up through the ranks, and then having some sort of a rotating system where players keep coming and going, and the gaps are filled. It will take some time. Now, whether people have the patience and confidence in this structure, it's all down to the passion of the people who are running the show, and having faith in the system that you have some sort of a structure and you keep a strict eye on what the players are doing, how much effort they're putting in, whether they are going in the right direction, because there are certain kind of failures you can accept, you can live with, and there's certain kind which you cannot. Now, if they're making the right kind of mistakes, which we don't know from the outside, but only those in the management know when it comes to training habits, lifestyle habits, and the training drills. So, if they're doing it right there and then committing some mistakes on the field, which anyone can do, then that's fine. And then it's up to us and those in a UAE cricket establishment to just stay patient and have faith that, yes, over a period of time, the system will grow where young kids will start, 18, 19 year old kids will start and performing and take UAE cricket regularly to international tournaments.
And once again, it brings up the point, as you said, there is patience, but there also needs to be that long-term commitment. And I think what we've said quite a lot of times before, again, is the whole coaching situation that they find themselves in. I mean, Owais, is it till end of January that he's in charge until?
Yeah, not
is an interim coach.
Yeah,
and if in that time, he's already had that extended. I mean, is it not time that someone, if it's Oase, if it's someone else, is committed to, and that is, here you are, you're the man, you have 3 years, this is your target, get to a World Cup, here you go. Is it not time for that?
Now we don't know what the deal is between him and the board. Maybe there might be some issues which we are not aware of. It might be from either parties, and it might be a valid one. That is why they are looking at it in such a short term. They have made it such a short term arrangement. But looking at the overall structure, whoever comes in, for sure it has to be on a long term basis. And secondly, some pain has to be worn out this time, because it's a new system that everyone is working on. They're getting used to. Even the players, they don't know what is expected of them, and they don't know how to play with it, and it should be expected. Just because we say it doesn't mean they feel professional.
Mm.
It's something that you. When you look at established teams and all across the globe, young kids playing, they know the system, that what professional sport means. You go to a domestic game, you'll see them training and see, yes, once you make the cut, this is what comes with the job. And these are things that you have to give up to be at the highest level. Like every kid in India knows, like if you need to be in the national team, you need to be someone like Virat Kohli, cut out all the sweets, all the carbs, you have to hit the gym, you just have to have great fitness, your running between the wickets have to be of highest class, you cannot afford any distractions if you want to make the cut. Now that only comes once you have a structure that's functioning around you.
Yeah.
Now, it's now because the players themselves are setting the standards for those around them. We'll have to be patient and hope that the people that have been chosen are irresponsible enough, and those overlooking them are smart enough to spot where they are failing.
It's always harder to be the first.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, to walk that path.
They are setting the standard.
Exactly.
Whatever they are, at this point it has started, and the bunch, whatever pool you are talking about, 15 or 20 or 35 players, these are the players we have at this moment. And whatever standards UAE cricket is setting, it's around these players. Now, there's only that much that you can get out of this batch, which was earlier during doing regular jobs and also playing cricket. Now there's not one. You cannot say they're completely in their professional setup, because most of their life they have played as a semi-professional.
Yeah.
So they are just setting the standard. Probably the next line, the crop of players which starts to come in, will show that much greater intensity when it comes to training and lifestyle habits.
Yeah.
And all.
And you know, it's a learning curve. I mean, when we had Paul Franks on a while ago, when he was ruling himself out of the running, and then Oase, the last time he was on, they were both saying about the mentality. It's a massive thing. It's
huge.
A massive thing. And I mean, the big thing, and I think hopefully, as Oase says there, I mean, he wants these guys to be taking something away from this series.
Mm.
I mean, you're playing against first-class cricketers from Surrey and Worcestershire and all these counties back home, and on the brink of the England side. I mean, one guy they've played against has been flown out to India to be called up and likely to make his test debut in the fourth test.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the matches they should be taking things from, isn't it? These are the series where they can take real working examples and build on their games from there.
Yes, because there's certain you cannot take every tournament, every opponent the same way. It's there's certain players you just have to concentrate that much, a team that you need to concentrate that much more on. And personally, I would just concentrate on the process at the moment. Right now, it's that critical moment where you just take care of your process, and whatever the opponent throws at you, you look at it after that, because now it's a new system which the UAE is trying to set up, and it will be a long drawn out process. Ultimately, all boils down to patience from the establishment and the management as well, because I'm pretty sure the team wants to raise its bar to a professional level and produce such amazing results as teams like Afghanistan do. You look at them and you know they are playing a certain brand of cricket, which is attractive, and they make their presence felt. So I'm sure the UAE players also want to reach that level of performance, if not results. It will take time, but we must accept that this is the bunch, which, this is the group which came through the previous process, and they're just trying to set something new. So while we need to give them some leeway, we will have to be a bit harsh at some point.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I mean, Oasis, these guys, the Emirates Cricket Board, I mean, these guys, as in the players, I mean, they're planting the seeds. It's just hope that, you know, when we look back at this in a few years' time, it actually has been a good learning curve, and it's actually taken them to where UAE cricket hopefully will end up being.
Yeah.
And maybe even a full member nation. Who knows, Ajit?
Yeah,
we must aim big, as you said.
Yeah.
I'm getting ahead of myself. None of that patience. But Ajit, and thanks very much for joining us. Hassan and Chetan as well, and Oasis for speaking on the phone earlier. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And thank you for listening to this week's Sport360 Talking Cricket podcast. Cheers again, Ajit.
Cheers, and bye.